The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. I know many of you listen every week as we bring you the Book Nook on Saturday mornings at 7 o'clock and on Sunday mornings at 10:30, and they're entirely different programs. And some of you have observed over the last few weeks, gosh, Vic, are you ever going to do a new interview? You've been playing a lot of best stuffs, Vic. You've been on vacation. What's going on over there? Well, August is typically a time when book publicists and authors are on vacation, and also it's a time when the publishers aren't putting out that many books, and that's my excuse. So, no, actually, that we do the best we can, and we're going to have some new interviews for you coming up next week. So, or at least one. I'm pretty sure we're going to have at least one for you next week. So here we are on the Best of the Book Nook. As I promised during that teaser before the news, we're going to go back 30 years to an interview I did with a former First Lady. I've had a lot of interviews over the last 30-some years with politicians and people with proximity to politicians. I talked to George McGovern twice. He ran against Richard Nixon in 1972. For president, he lost. I talked to a congressman, John Kasich. I talked to him again as governor. I've had Senator Sherrod Brown on twice. A former senator, I interviewed him for the Dayton Daily News, Byron Dorgan. Same with Senator Barbara Boxer. And former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. I interviewed him for the Dayton Daily News. On WYSO, I interviewed Congressman Kwesi Mfume, former New York Governor Mario Cuomo. I even interviewed a guy who was, in 1998, just a real estate tycoon. This week, the New York Times described him with this quote, "He remains the most dominant figure on the planet." Of course, we all know who he's talking about. Donald Trump was on the program in 1998. I've had people with proximity to presidents, John Dean, who brought down Richard M. Nixon during the Watergate scandal. I've had him on twice. He was the attorney in the White House and a guy who was instrumental in getting George W. Bush elected governor of Texas and then later on two terms as president, Karl Rove. And speaking of proximity to presidents, for the Dayton Daily News, I did an interview years ago with the daughter of George W. Bush, Jenna Bush. Jenna was still living in the White House. Her father was still president. And she was lovely. And now she helps people find new books with her role as a television personality, an influencer, I think is what they call them now. And she was wonderful. And someone must have been listening in on the phone because I never talked to her about her dad, and I really wanted to talk to her about what it's like being the daughter of George W. Bush. And when I asked her about it, suddenly she said, well, I gotta go. 30 years ago, I did an interview with a former First Lady, and I need to set this up. I need to give you some background here. In 1994, George H.W. Bush ran for re-election with his vice president, Dan Quayle, and they lost to Bill Clinton and Al Gore. And then Dan Quayle's wife began publishing fiction, Marilyn Quayle, and Dan Quayle was supposed to be coming through Dayton on book tour for a book that he wrote. I don't remember what it was about. It was kind of inspirational nonfiction, I believe. Anyway, I really wanted to interview Dan Quayle badly. Now, how could I get an in on interviewing Dan Quayle? Because I've gotten close before to former President Jimmy Carter. I almost got an interview with him. The Secret Service was checking me out, and then he canceled the book tour. He didn't come to Dayton. Dan Quayle did come to Dayton, and I did not get an interview with him. Even so, when I interviewed Marilyn Quayle, I was very, very nice to her. And we had to record an interview outside of my normal program time because she was only available for a little bit of time on one day. And I've included in this snippet our conversation before we started taping the interview and after, when I'm essentially begging her to put in a good word with Dan Quayle for me, because I was really hoping I'd get him. It didn't work. Let's listen now to the best of the Book Nook. Marilyn Quayle talking about a book she co-wrote with her sister called The Campaign on WYSO.
Hello?
Vic?
Yes.
Oh, good. It's Marilyn Quayle.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Great. Really appreciate you calling in. How much time do you have, Mrs. Quayle?
Looks like about 20 minutes.
Excellent. And before we get started, what's the best way that I could address you? Mrs. Quayle, Marilyn?
Either is fine.
Okay, great. Well, I just finished the book last night. And before we get started, I wanted to mention that yesterday I had a guest, Rita Mae Brown, the author.
Oh.
And she said, when she heard you were coming onto the program, she said, oh, I know Donna Eicher, who worked with you on writing, and she says that you're an excellent rider of horses.
Oh, yeah, Donna helped train one of my horses.
And she said, I hear that Marilyn's daughter is also a good rider.
She's better than I am.
She said if you're ever in Afton, Virginia, at the Oak Ridge Fox Hunt Club, she wanted to extend an invitation for you to ride with her and go fox hunting.
Oh, how nice. I will remember that. That's very sweet of her.
I just wanted to mention that before we get started.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm ready if you are.
Great. Go ahead.
Okay. Good day. Welcome to the Book Nook. Joining me on the telephone is Marilyn Tucker Quayle, wife of former Vice President Dan Quayle. Hello. Welcome to the Book Nook.
Well, hello. It's nice to be with you.
This is a very interesting novel. It follows up your previous book, Embrace the Serpent. Can you give us a little snapshot of the plot of the first one and then lead us into this new one, The Campaign?
Embrace the Serpent starts with our United States Senator, Bob Grant, who is a conservative Republican from the state of Georgia. And Cuba has, fortunately from my standpoint, is in an upheaval because Castro has died of natural causes. And the book is about the jockeying for power to take over that island and how the President of the United States gets pulled into supporting a faction that will not allow for freedom of the Cuban people. And Bob Grant, who is on the National Security Committee, finds out that this is all happening, and he's trying to get the White House to change their mind. And in the meantime, we're going through espionage and underhanded fighting and manipulation, and we have a very exciting time in trying to get the right people in power in Cuba who will allow for the freedom of the Cuban people.
And that's the basic plot of Embrace the Serpent. And this new book, The Campaign, picks up where you left off.
Yes, we are with our United States Senator Bob Grant, and he is up for re-election. It's 9 days before the Senate election will take place, and he is the great hope of the Republican Party for 2 years hence when the incumbent Democratic president is up for re-election, and he should be able to beat him. So all of a sudden, 9 days before his election, which is supposed to be a landslide victory, he gets pulled into a web of murder and intrigue. He's accused of murdering a reporter and accused of being a drug dealer. His son is accused of being a drug dealer. He has to clear his name, clear the name of his family, find out who's doing it and why, and has to do it all in 9 days or he won't get reelected. And it pulls us to the White House, Air Force One, up to New York, and down to Georgia.
And I don't know if you mentioned this, but Bob Grant is a conservative black senator from Georgia.
Yes.
And he's on track to possibly become the first African-American president when he gets set up right before the senatorial election. And you have some very interesting things in this book. There's been a consolidation of the various crime-fighting agencies under the Attorney General.
Yes, and that was something that was kind of interesting because we decided that if that were done, it would be an incredible power play. And when we wrote the outline for this book, which was in late 91 or early 92, we presumed the Republicans would be reelected, then this was all made up. And then all of a sudden we have a Democratic president. and there has been talk in this administration about this kind of consolidation. And Nancy and I both kind of looked at each other and said, oh, no, how could they be doing this? This is in our book. one of those things where truth is stranger than fiction kind of thing. We feel like we've got deja vu or something.
Well, I realize this is a work of pure fiction, but nevertheless, I had a lot of fun reading the campaign and looking at particular characters and the way that they acted and thinking, now who could this be in real life? I realize none of these people are real people, but you just couldn't help analyzing them.
Well, we were pulled together different personalities. I've been through three administrations that we were in Washington for, and able to watch different people in power and how they handle power. So each character really pulls from many different people and I think become real because I'm so close to the activities and know how people respond. And so many of the things that occur in the book actually have occurred in real life, but not necessarily in one campaign.
Well, I found it very suspenseful, and I have to wonder, you're writing with your sister, Nancy Tucker Northcott. What's it like to write with her? Do you each have your own specialty? Do you write it all together? How does that work?
Well, I do the plot line, and then I'll bring two or three different storylines to Nancy, and we sit down and we talk through them and decide which one we both are the most excited about. And then we talk through it, and then Nancy will take it and she'll plot out the first few chapters without any dialogue, but just kind of a general flow, send it to me, I'll work on it. In the meantime, she's calling me saying, I'm stuck, what did you intend here, what are we going to do here? and scenes that are specifically things I know about, like things that happen in the White House, things that political events, things that are at the Senate, I write those, and she helps fill in. So we kind of go back and forth. She would come up to Indianapolis about once a month for anywhere from 3 to 5 days, and we'd lock ourselves in my basement and talk things through, read what we have, line edit, talk where the problems are, figure out where things are boring and that we have to speed things up or where things just don't make sense. And then we pass it back and forth and just edit and edit and edit. So by the time our actual editor gets it, there's very little to do.
My guest in the book Nook is Marilyn Tucker Quayle, and she and her sister and co-author Nancy Tucker Northcott have a new political thriller called The Campaign.
You're listening to the best of the book Nook on WYSO, revisiting an interview I did with former First Lady Marilyn Quayle. And I know some of you probably flinched when I introduced the program today and I described Melania as a former First Lady. Well, between 2020 and 2024, she was. So I hate to be a nitpicker. We're going to bring you more of this interview with Marilyn Quayle right after this message on WYSO 91.3, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. You're listening to the best of the book Nook on WYSO, going back 30 years to my interview with former First Lady Marilyn Quayle. She had co-written a book with her sister, a novel called The Campaign, and she was coming through Dayton on book tour, and we tracked her down on the telephone, and she was a lovely guest. She was relaxed. She was charming. I got her to laugh a few times, and I was very, very nice to her because I was hoping that she would get me an interview with her husband, Dan Quayle, when he came through Dayton. It didn't happen. But even so, I was very kind. Let's listen.
I was on the edge of my seat reading this book. I was up until 3 o'clock in the morning, and there are a lot of things that come out in this book that I have to believe are things that you really strongly believe in, such as the need for privacy for people in the office of president and vice president. It seems that there's been such a sea change in that since, say, the days of Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. I had Doris Kearns Goodwin, their biographer, on this program recently, and she said back in those days, people didn't nose into the privacy of those offices. They left those people alone. And it seems like now nothing is a secret, nothing is private, and they just have you under a microscope all the time.
Well, they do. It's very unfortunate because they forget that we all need time to be human and to be ourselves, and you can't do that in the White House anymore. And to always feel that the second you walk out the door that you've got to be on is self-defeating, really, and I don't think it allows for the best performance by our elected officials either.
And I also got a strong feeling that we have a lot of biased reporting going on in this country and that journalists have forgotten the need to be impartial.
One of the things we wanted to show was that the national media really is driven by just a couple of news outlets, and what they write in their newspapers ends up being what's on the nightly news, what's passed out to all the local newspapers. And most people think that investigative reporters from each newspaper have looked into everything and that the story is fresh and new and everybody's finding the same thing, where in fact only a couple of people have even done the investigating. And many times they don't uncover everything or they hold back things to skew the story the way they want it.
So you have people out there, just a few people, who are controlling what comes out in the print media, in the television media?
Yes. And on a national level, that's absolutely true. And that's an awful lot of power in a few people's hands, and it can be manipulated. And we do show that in our book, that it is possible to manipulate them. And we also show that while there are good intentions, and the reporters may not realize that what they're doing has changed the focus to a point where even though the information is true, the way it's reported, it makes it totally untrue, that the intentions may be good, but because of the way it is done, you come up with false actions. And that's a hard thing to combat.
My guest is Marilyn Tucker Quayle. She and her sister and co-author Nancy Tucker Northcott have a new political thriller called The Campaign. You're a journalist, the fellow who runs the Washington Herald in the book. He's quite an interesting character. This fellow has a hidden agenda.
Yes, he does. He was burnt by our senator in the Cuba fiasco because he took the side of the totalitarian regime and helped put the president in a very awkward position because he fed him false information unbeknownstly. And he really wants to end this senator's career on a personal level because he made him a laughingstock at the White House.
It must be wonderful to be back in Indiana and to have regained some measure of privacy.
It's nice to be home. I think one of the things that I missed while we were in Washington is the fact that Washington is not a community. You don't put aside party lines at any given point and start working just for the good of the community, which in order to make a community like Dayton or like Indianapolis work, you have to. And I missed that ability to just work together for the good of everything around us. So it's nice to be home. It's nice to be back in the Midwest.
Well, we're glad you're back. You've been on tour now for about a month?
Yes, about 3 weeks.
And I believe today, as we're speaking, is the official, I think they called it lay-down date for the novel. This is the official release date, but it's actually been out for a couple of weeks.
Well, this is a joint publication by HarperCollins and Zondervan, and Zondervan had a little earlier pub date than HarperCollins did. So this is the HarperCollins pub date. It's very confusing.
I think often when, quote, celebrity authors put out books, such as yourself, people just presume that you have a ghost writer, that you didn't really write the book. I read this book, and it is very well written.
Thank you. And there is no ghost writer. Nancy and I did everything. And our telephone bills, FedEx bills, travel bills will prove that paper bills. I think I've brought more crates of computer paper for this book than we did for the last one.
Hosting this program, I read a lot of suspense books, and if I had read this particular one and not known that you had written it, I would still say it stands up with some of the best things I've read lately.
Well, thank you. We're very pleased with the book. It's funny, when you get a book done after you've done so many line edits and read it so many different times, you get it into galleys, and Nancy and I both, you set it aside for several months after it was in galleys because there's nothing to do. You can't re-edit anything after it's in galleys. And when the hard book was delivered to our house, we both sat down and read it again and called each other and said, you know, this really is a good book, that kind of thing, because you're so close to it. You don't realize what you've done, which is rather fun.
You have so many realistic scenes. I imagine you had to do a lot of research to do some of them. There's some wild parties with young people carrying on where I can't imagine that this is something that you witnessed. You had to have done some research to do this.
Well, those parties, oh, it's so funny because our initial attempt at doing those, we have all, Nancy has four children and they're all between the ages of 18 and 23. My children are 17 to 21. And we had our kids read them. And the scenes as they are now is an amalgam of the contributions of all seven of those children. They thought our initial attempt was pretty feeble.
So they gave you some assistance to make
they
it
did.
Seem...
They thought my 70s jargon was really out of it.
Were you using terms like groovy or?
Well, no, it was just, you know, I tried to, since obviously I haven't been to a college party in a very long time, you go on what you know, and I was in college in the late 60s, early 70s, and kind of pulled from that and from things that I had read and, you know, lately about those things. They did think it was a little humorous. They're very realistic now, though.
I thought so. That's why I was impressed. And I don't want to give away too much about the plot, but the ending was a real shock for me. The ending really surprised me. And I thought it was great, the way you did it.
Thank you. But part of the ending was very interesting because I read the abridged version of the book on tape, which is out. And when I got to the point where I was reading part of the ending, it affected me emotionally, which I thought was amazing since I'd written it. And it was because dealing with political offices and a life that was very close to me, and I guess I'm very patriotic, so it affected me very much.
My guest is Marilyn Tucker Quayle, the wife of former Vice President Dan Quayle, and she and her sister and co-author Nancy Tucker Northcott have a new political thriller to follow up Embrace the Serpent. This one is The Campaign. You have a lot of novelists in your family these days. I understand your husband has a new book coming out.
His book is nonfiction, though. And his book, I think its official pub date is next week, and I know he'll be going to Dayton. I don't know quite the date when he'll be there.
Sometime in June, I hear.
Is that when it is? I don't know. And his is called The American Family, The Values That Make Us Strong. And it's a very interesting approach to discussions of families. He's taken five families from around the country, from West Virginia to Hawaii, all from different backgrounds, all with different problems. But it's a positive book on what works within families. And it's from their perspective, from the grandparents, the parents, the children, the grandchildren's perspective, on what works and, in many cases, what doesn't work.
Well, we would love to talk to him about the book in the Book Nook if he's available.
I will pass that message on.
That's great. Marilyn Tucker Quayle is my guest. And as I read the book and I saw the way the media was behaving in the campaign, I was absolutely flabbergasted this past weekend when I read the New York Times and they had such a vicious review of this book. I said to myself, did they even read the same book that I read? I was astounded by their review.
Fortunately, I haven't read it.
It was awful. And I think it was pure politics.
But we have found that if the book reviewer is an actual book reviewer, we get good reviews. If they give it to their political staff, then it becomes a political review. And what I've found is interesting is the political reviews, they end up being snotty, saying, well, of course, the Republicans are all good, the Democrats are all bad, when in fact one of our heroes is a Democrat sheriff from Georgia. And he is very likable, strong character who is very honorable. So I don't understand where they come from.
This sheriff really saves the day repeatedly throughout the book.
Yes, he does, and he bucks the system in order to do it at what could have been great political cost to him.
And it's not about politics. He knows Bob Grant is a good man, and that's all he cares about.
Which is what I think most people judge who they vote for on.
Well, I found it ironic after reading the book and finishing it last night, in retrospect, to look at the review in the New York Times, I said to myself, I think she struck a nerve with them, and that is why they reacted so adversely. This isn't about the book. This is about something else. This is about the fact that in the campaign, you basically carve them up, not them by name particularly, but just the media in general.
I think we point out what the problems can be when you have a monolithic national press corps. And they don't like to be told that. What was interesting is we've already been to Washington and done the tour in Washington, D.C., and I was a little nervous about that because this is about them, and they know the life. And to a person, the members of the National Press Corps who had read the book said, number one, it was very good, very exciting, and we nailed them to the T, which was very interesting, and that they do behave that way. So it's sometimes very hard to see yourself in the mirror.
My guest is Marilyn Tucker Quayle. She and her sister and co-author Nancy Tucker Northcott have a new political thriller. It's called The Campaign. This partnership between you and your sister seems to be going very well. Are there more books in the offing?
Well, our publishers have asked us to come up with another plot line and start going. So as soon as we finish the book tour, we'll sit down and get serious about that.
Well, that's exciting. I read almost all the major Ohio newspapers on a daily basis, Akron, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Dayton, Columbus, and I am amazed to see all the same stories in every paper every day, the same photos, the same wire service stories. It seems like they're all the same paper.
It does, and I think it lulls people into thinking that all those facts must be true and it must be presented exactly right because all these papers couldn't be wrong when, in fact, they're all getting it from the same source.
Well, I know you're running on a tight schedule, so we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here in the Miami Valley about this new book. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
I just hope everyone enjoys the book and plan on staying up late at night if you do get it, because you won't be able to put it down.
I definitely concur. That's what happened to me last night. That's all the time we have for the Book Nook today. Marilyn, if you could just hang on the phone for a second. We're taping this interview, so we'll just sign off right now, and I just want to chat with you for a second.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Marilyn, I'm serious about interviewing your husband.
Okay, well, I will pass it on. I don't know what his schedule is.
Okay, well, I've already talked to his publicist, and he said I needed to fax a request, and I was waiting to talk to you first because I just wanted to make sure that this was the kind of program he would want to be on, and I figured after you'd been on my program that you'd be able to tell him.
Okay, well, I will put him, he's in Moscow right now, so when he gets back, I'll tell him.
Okay, well, I'll fax the request, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show, and I hope the book is a big success for you.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to you.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
And that was the best of the Book Nook with Marilyn Quayle, recorded 30 years ago, and that last section did not appear in the original program. I actually did tape that interview with Marilyn Quayle, and then at the very end, you heard me begging and being obsequious, hoping that she would convince her husband, former Vice President Dan Quayle, to be my guest on the program. It didn't happen. I tried. I was very nice to her. I praised her book. And what more can I say? We've got a bonus segment coming your way, and you're not going to want to miss this one. It's coming up right after this. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and thanks for staying with me this morning for this bonus segment. I wanted to share something from the trenches of the Book Nook. I was informed recently that there are some people out there who are fraudulently representing people like me. Fresh Air with Terry Gross found out that there's someone out there pretending to be them, and they write emails to authors, and they say all these really positive things about the authors, and they say they want to invite them on the program, and they claim that they've read the book and Terry really liked it, and would they please agree to be on the program? Now, if I was an author out there and I got an email like that, I'd be holding my nose because I would know there's no way Terry Gross read my book. There's just no way. She's got people who all around her who are filters for that kind of stuff. They're going to look those books over. She's not going to send out an email like that. Well, apparently there's a lot of this going on. I want to share an email that was sent to an author recently. Dear blank, I hope this email finds you well. My name is Vic McCunis, host of Book Nook on 91.3 FM, where I conduct long-form interviews with authors about their writing, literary craft, and stories exploring emotional healing, faith, and human relationships. I read about the release of your debut novel, Blank, and I was touched by its thoughtful, sensitive approach to trauma recovery and trust. Exploring the journey of an editor navigating past trauma alongside a bookstore owner in Nashville and examining how safety, faith, and committed love interact during the healing process offers a deeply resonant topic for our public radio listeners. I would love to invite you on to Book Nook for an interview to discuss your book. A few specific angles I am eager to explore with you include the quietness of safety, the dynamic between Amanda and David, and how a sense of quiet security can become the foundation for confronting past trauma and mental health struggles. Editor as author, how your professional background as a book editor informed your approach to narrative structure, tone, and character development in your debut novel. Faith and restoration, examining how Christian faith, grace, and forgiveness can be portrayed with emotional realism and nuance without diminishing the difficulty of life's harder truths. If you are open to joining me for a public radio conversation, please let me know your general availability over the coming weeks so we can set up a recording time. Note, to ensure optimal broadcast quality for our radio audience, we conduct recorded phone interviews over a standard landline or dedicated studio line whenever possible. Warm regards, Vic McCunis, American radio host and journalist, WYSO. Then it has our website and a fake Gmail address with my name in it. And I have heard from almost a dozen authors just in the last few weeks who tracked down my real email address and said, "Did you really invite me on your program?" And I said, "I'm sorry." And they sent me copies of these emails. And they're all the same kind of template. They start off the same way, obviously written with artificial intelligence. Whoever these fraudsters are, they are not reading these books. They're taking press releases or they're harvesting information on the internet somewhere about these stories. And the grammar is good. There are no typos. The English is good. I thought it was a little strange they described me as American radio host. I didn't know quite what that was about. But the first author who contacted me apparently responded to this. And they were informed that a particular author had high praise for me and for the interviews I conduct. And they named the author. It's a woman I have never heard of. And they said there would be an appearance fee for their participation that they would have to pay to be on my program. And I'm going to guess that Terry Gross's program is getting the same kind of stuff being sent out on their behalf. So if you're one of the authors out there listening to this and you got an email from me that resembles the one I just shared with you, it's fake. I'm sorry. They all follow the same basic structure. And then if they get a nibble, if the bobber starts wiggling, I don't know if they ask for cryptocurrency or Bitcoin. I'm wondering how they must handle the payment. I think the writers who have gone far enough to be asked for money have been too embarrassed to share that material with me so far, but they are sending out a lot of this in my name. And I'm kind of weirdly flattered that they would bother because it's ridiculous. Now, I've noticed a trend of all the books that they've been inviting authors on for. They're all self-published, and every one of them has had a Christian theme of some sort. So I don't know where they're pulling this database from, but that's what they're doing, and it's fake. So if you're out there listening and you're an author and you're checking out that Vic McCunis guy that sent you this email, I didn't send it. I do contact authors sometimes and ask about potential interviews. I normally will go through their publicist. But when I do that, I don't lay on a bunch of BS like whoever this person or this machine, artificial intelligence or superficial stupidity or whatever it is that they're using here. Whoever it is, I don't know what the game is. I'm hoping no one has fallen for it because I really don't want to hear from somebody who wants their money back because I don't have it, okay? So that you've been warned, and the whole thing is bizarre. Tomorrow, tune in for the Book Nook. I mentioned earlier in the program about how everybody's been on vacation. Well, in August, there's still some people taking vacations, and one of them is Jerry Kenney, the host of Why So Weekend. He's going to be taking Sunday off tomorrow, so we're going to bring you a full hour of the Book Nook. And I was just reading a novel and I'm going to be featuring this novel on the program soon. And something caught my eye. She writes, she's in a small town in Georgia. She reached for the front door, surprised that the paper was still alive. The front office was empty. She picked up a fresh paper off the counter. It was very thin, more the size of a circular than a real paper. Still alive, but dying, like papers across the country, she thought. That's Renee Denfeld from her book, The Talking Bone. Great book, by the way. I'm hoping to have her on the program soon. So we're going to be talking about newspapers tomorrow in the Book Nook. I'm going to pull out an interview I did in 1998. It was the 100th anniversary of the Dayton Daily News. And I interviewed Ron Rollins, who was the feature editor of the Dayton Daily News in 1998. And Ron was one of the editors of a book they put out called Dayton Inc. And I have never replayed this interview before. We talked a lot about Dayton history, about the history of the Dayton Daily News, particularly James Cox, our former governor, who was the guy that bought the Springfield News Sun and then eventually just kept adding properties to his portfolio and created the massive Cox Company down in Atlanta, which still owns the Dayton Daily News and the Springfield News Sun. And they tried a few years ago to sell them, but if you know the history, you know that didn't work out. I know there are a lot of you out there who read my columns in the paper, also called the Book Nook. I've been reviewing books for the Dayton Daily News, Springfield News Sun, for the last 22 years. So tomorrow on the program, we'll bring you that history of the paper, and the paper was still really doing well in 1998. They were getting ready to build a big printing plant in Franklin. Actually, it was almost ready to be opened when we did this interview, according to my chronology. And they had a good circulation, and things were doing well. Well, as you probably noticed, most newspapers in this country have been having a tough time the last 10, 15 years. One reason for that, classified advertising, that was the cash cow for most newspapers. And then something called Craigslist came along. Boom. All that classified advertising money went south, and that put a lot of pressure on newspapers. And I have loved reviewing books for the Dayton Daily News. So many readers contacting me, telling me how much they love learning about new books, just like they do on this program. I hear from listeners all the time, and you are my favorite people. Listeners to this public radio station and readers of newspapers and books, you are definitely my favorite people. And we keep chasing these young readers. We hear that young people don't read books anymore. They're looking at their phones. They're getting their news from Reddit. You say to them, well, do you know what a newspaper is? And they're like, my grandma used to put those in the bottom of the birdcage. They don't know what a newspaper is. And it's kind of sad. And I've made it my mission to encourage people to read more, whether it's a book, a newspaper, or just read on their phone. That's fine. Just as long as you're reading, open your mind, go somewhere else, learn something. And tomorrow you're going to learn a lot if you listen to the Book Nook on our extended program, full hour tomorrow, the whole 10 o'clock hour. We will be preempting WISO weekend. I'll bring you Ron Rollins, and I'm going to look back at the 22 years I have spent writing book reviews for the newspaper, and we're going to talk a little bit about that history, or at least I am, and hopefully you'll be wanting to listen because I think you'll find it very interesting. I fell in love with with newspaper columns back in my early days, back when newspapers still had afternoon editions, back when newspapers were delivered by kids like me. I was 10 years old when I started helping my brother out on his paper route. I would deliver one side of Polk Boulevard. He would deliver the other. And then I got my own route. It was an afternoon paper. Every day after school, I would run up to the corner and get my bundle. I couldn't wait to open that bundle. Those afternoon papers had in-depth stories. I learned so much. But the thing that really influenced me, there was a writer for the Des Moines Register named Donald Call. He had a column called Over the Coffee. And during Richard Nixon's presidency, he was constantly going after Nixon. Really great columns. I absolutely loved them. Some years later, I was getting on a plane at O'Hare in Chicago. And I walked down the aisle, and there was only one empty seat. And I got ready to sit down. I looked at the guy sitting in the window seat. I recognized him. It was my hero, Donald Call, sitting there on a flight from Washington. He was going back to Des Moines for a meeting at the Register. I started to sit down, and I said, "You're Donald Call." He said, "Oh," he looked real nervous. I mean, here he is in Chicago. Who the heck is going to recognize him? I had him as my captive prisoner for that entire short flight. And by the time we got off the plane, he said, "Do you want to share a cab downtown?" Only time I ever met my hero. They say you don't meet your heroes, but I have. I met another hero of mine hosting this program, the astronaut and former U.S. Senator, former test pilot, John Glenn. I admired him so much. I interviewed him for his memoir. We talked for over an hour. It was time to end the program. Fresh Air, coincidentally, was coming up next. But I just rolled right over NPR News. I rolled right over Fresh Air because, by golly, I had John Glenn on the telephone. And just like Donald Call, he was my prisoner. I'm just kidding. He loved the interview. We never even got. He was such a talker, such a charming man. We never even got to the return to space when he was old and he went back to space. We never even got to the Senate career. This guy had such a life story. Another one of my heroes. And I met him on the radio. So I always wanted to be a newspaper columnist because of Donald Call. When I was in high school, I had a newspaper column. And in 2004, Ron Rollins offered me the opportunity to write a newspaper column for the Dayton Daily News called The Book Nook. I wrote about books every week. 1,149 weeks in a row. I did miss a week there. You might recall during 2008, September, we had the remnant of Hurricane Ike come through the area, and it blew down lots of power lines, knocked down lots of trees, caused a lot of damage. We lost power for a week. I had no electricity. We were cooking out in the yard over a campfire. I missed my deadline. I did not turn in my column that week. That was the only one I missed over the last 22 years. And I'm proud of that. It's like the Book Nook, the radio show. You can count on it, right? Here we are, and we'll be here again tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Put that on your map. Put that on your calendar. 10 o'clock. We're going to be a half hour early tomorrow. We'll be filling in the slot for WISA Weekend. We'll be talking about the Dayton Daily News and Ron Rollins with the history of the Dayton Daily News up through 1998 and my own rather short history with the Dayton Daily News, only 22 years. That's coming up tomorrow. Don't miss it. 10 o'clock.